4. Bad cough. Paul was free until 1400, so right after breakfast, we suited up and equipped a dog with extra oxygen and climbing gear. He'd done a lot of climbing and caving on both Earth and Mars. If we found the hole, when we found the hole, he was going to approach it roped up, so if he broke through the way I had, he wouldn't fall far or fast. I'd awakened early with a slight cough, but felt okay. I got some cough suppressant pills from the first aid locker, chewed one, and put two in my helmet's tongue-operated pill cache. We went through the airlock and weren't surprised to see that the storm had covered all my tracks, and everyone else's, including Red's. I was hoping that his sawhorse thing might have gouged out a distinctive mark when it stopped. We still had a good chance of finding the hole, thanks to the MPS built into the suit and its inertial compass. I'd started counting steps, going west, when I set out from Telegraph Hill, and was close to 5,000 when I fell through. That's about 4 kilometers, maybe an hour's walk in the daytime. "So we're probably being watched," Mother said, and waved to the invisible camera. "Hey there, Mr. Red. Hello, Dr. Green. We're bringing back your patient with the insurance forms." I waved too, both arms. Paul put up both his hands, palm out, showing he wasn't armed. Though what it would mean to a four-armed creature, I wasn't sure. No welcoming party appeared, so we went to the right of Telegraph Hill and started walking and counting. A lot of the terrain looked familiar. Several times I had us move to the left or right when I was sure I had been closer to a given formation. We walked a half kilometer or so past Paul's wrecked Dumbo. I hadn't seen it in the dark. Suddenly, I noticed something.
"Wait! Paul! I think it's just ahead of you."
I hadn't realized it, walking in the dark, but what seemed to be a simple rise in the ground was actually rounded, like an overturned shallow bowl.
"Like a little lava dome, maybe," he said. "That's where you fell through."
He pointed at something I couldn't quite see from my angle and height.
"Big enough for you and the dog, anyhow."
He unloaded his mountaineering stuff from the dog, then took a hammer and pounded into the ground a long piton, which is like a spear point with a hole for the rope. Then he did another one about a foot away. He passed an end of the rope through both of them and tied it off. He pulled on the rope with all his weight.
"Carmen, Laura, help me test this."
We did, and it still held. He looped most of the rope over his shoulder and took a couple of turns under his arms, and then clamped it through a metal thing he called a crab. It's supposed to keep you from falling too fast, even if you let go.
"This probably isn't all necessary," he said, "since I'm just taking a look down, but better safe than dead."
He backed up the slight incline, checking over his shoulder, and then got on his knees to approach the hole. I held my breath as he took out a big flashlight and leaned over the edge. I didn't hear Mother breathing either.
"Okay," he said. "There's the side reflector that broke off your dog. I've got a good picture."
"Good," I tried to say, but it came out as a cough. Then another cough, and then several, harder and harder. I felt faint, and sat down and tried to stay calm, eyes closed, shallow breathing. When I opened my eyes, I saw specks of blood on the inside of my helmet. I could taste it inside my mouth and on my lips.
"Mother, I'm sick."
She saw the blood and kneeled down next to me.
"Breathe. Can you breathe?" "Yes, I don't think it's the suit."
She was checking the oxygen fitting and meter on the back.
How long have you felt sick?
Not long. Well, now I do. I had a little cough this morning.
And didn't tell anybody?
No, I took a pill and it was all right.
I can see how all right it was. Do you think you can stand?
I nodded and got to my feet, wobbling a little. She held on to my arm. Then Paul came up and held the other.
I can just see the antenna on Telegraph Hill, he said. I'll call for the Jeep.
No, don't, I pleaded. I don't want to give the dragon the satisfaction.
Mother gave a nervous laugh.
This is way beyond that, sweetheart. Blood in your lungs? What if I let you walk back and you dropped dead?
I'm not going to die.
But saying that gave me a horrible chill. Then I coughed a bright red string onto my faceplate. Mother eased me back down and awkwardly sat with my helmet in her lap while Paul shouted,
Mayday!
Over the radio.
Where did they come up with that word?
I asked Mother.
Easy to understand on a radio, I guess.
Modo would work just as well. I heard the click as her glove touched my helmet, trying to smooth my hair. I didn't cry. Embarrassing to admit, but I guess I felt kind of important, dying and all.
Dargo Solingen would feel like shit for doubting me, though the cause and effect link there wasn't too clear.
I lay there trying not to cough for maybe 20 minutes before the Jeep pulled up, driven by Dad.
One big happy family.
He and Mother lifted me into the back, and Paul took over the driving, leaving the dog and his climbing stuff behind. It was a fast and rough ride back. I got into another coughing spasm and spattered more blood and goop on the faceplate. Mother and Dad carried me into the airlock like a sack of grain, and then were all over each other trying to get me out of the Mars suit. At least they left the skin suit on while they hurried me through the corridor and mess area to Dr. Jefferson's aid station. He asked my parents to step outside, set me on the examination table, and stripped off the top of the skin suit to listen to my breathing with a stethoscope. He shook his head.
Carmen, it sure sounds as if you've got something in your lungs, but when I heard you were coming in with this, I looked at the whole body MRI we took yesterday, and there's nothing there.
He clicked on his clipboard and asked the window for my MRI, and there I was, in all my transparent glory.
Better take another one.
He pulled the top up over my shoulders.
You don't have to take anything off. Just lie down here.
The act of lying down made me cough sharply, but I caught it in my palm. He took a tissue and gently wiped my hand and looked at the blood.
Damn, he said quietly. You aren't a smoker? I mean on Earth.
Just twice, once tobacco and once pot, just one time each. He nodded.
Now take a really deep breath and try to hold it.
He took the MRI wand and passed it back and forth over my upper body.
Okay, you can breathe now. New picture?
He said to the window. Then he was quiet for too long.
Oh my. What could that be?
I looked, and there were black shapes in both of my lungs, about the size of golf balls.
What are they?
He shook his head.
Not cancer. Not an infection. This fast. Bronchitis wouldn't show up black anyhow. Better call Earth.
He looked at me with concern and something else. Maybe puzzlement.
Let's get you into bed in the next room and I'll give you a sedative. Stop the coughing. And then maybe I'll take a look inside.
Inside?
Brachioscopy. Put a little camera down there. You won't feel anything.
In fact, I didn't feel anything until I woke up several hours later. Mother was sitting by the bed, her hand on my forehead.
My nose... The inside of my nose feels funny.
That's where the tube went in.
The brachioscope.
Oh, yuck. Did he find anything?
She hesitated.
It's not from Earth. They snipped off some of it and took it to the lab. It's not... It doesn't have DNA.
I've got a Martian disease?
Mars, or wherever your potato people are from. Not Earth, anyhow. Everything alive on Earth has DNA. I prodded where it ached, under my ribs.
It's not organic?
Well, it is. Carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, phosphorus, sulfur. It has amino acids and proteins and even something like RNA, but that's as far as it goes.
That sounded bad enough.
So they're going to have to operate? On both my lungs? She made a little noise, and I looked up and saw her wiping her eyes.
What is it?
Mother? It's not that simple. The little piece they snipped off, it had to go straight into the glove box, the environmental isolation unit. That's the procedure we have for any Martian life we discover, because we don't know what effect it might have on human life.
In your case...
In my case, it's already attacked a human.
That's right. And they can't operate on you in the glove box.
So they're just going to leave it there?
No, but Dr. Jefferson can't operate until he can work in a place that's environmentally isolated from the rest of the base. They're working on it now, turning the far end of Unit B into a little self-contained hospital. You'll move in there tomorrow or the next day, and he'll take out the stuff. Two operations.
Two?
The first lung has to be working before he opens the second. On Earth, he could put you on a heart-slash-lung machine, I guess, and work on both, but not here.
I felt suddenly cold and clammy, and I must have turned pale.
It's not that bad, Mother said quickly. He doesn't have to open you up. He'll be working through a small hole in your side. It's called thoracoscopy. Like when I had my knee operated on and I was just in and out, and he'll have the best surgeons on Earth looking over his shoulder, advising him.
With a half-hour delay, I thought.
What if their advice was, no, don't do that!
Oops. I thought of an old bad joke. Politicians cover their mistakes with money. Cooks cover their mistakes with mayonnaise. Doctors cover theirs with dirt. I could be the first person ever buried on Mars. What an honor.
Wait, I said. Maybe they could help.
The Earth doctors?
Sure.
No!
I mean the aliens.
Honey, they couldn't...
They fixed my ankle just like that, didn't they?
Well, evidently they did. But that's sort of a mechanical thing. They wouldn't have to know any internal medicine...
But it wasn't medicine at all, not like we know it. Those big lenses, the smoking herbs, it was kind of mumbo-jumbo, but it worked.
There was one loud rap on the door, and Dr. Jefferson opened it and stepped inside, looking agitated.
Laura, Carmen, things have gone from bad to worse. The Parienza kids started coughing blood. They've got it. So I put my boy through the MRI... And he's got a mass in one of his lungs, too. Look, I have to operate on the Parienzas first. They're young, and this is hitting them harder.
That's okay, I said. By all means, get some practice on someone else first.
Laura, I want you to assist me in the surgery along with Celine.
Dr. Milius.
So far, this is only infecting the children. If it gets into the general population... If I get it...
Alf! I'm not a surgeon. I'm not even a doctor.
If Celine and I get this and die, you are a doctor. You are the doctor. You at least know how to use a scalpel.
Cutting up animals that are already dead.
Just calm down. The machine's not that complicated. It's a standard Waldo interface, and you have real-time MRI to show you where you're going.
Can you hear yourself talking, Alfonso? I'm just a biologist.
There was a long moment of silence while he looked at her.
Just come and pay attention. You might have to do Carmen.
All right, Mother said. She looked grim.
Now?
He nodded.
Celine's preparing them. I'm going to operate on Murray while she watches and assists. Then she'll do Roberta while I observe. Maybe an hour and a half each.
What can I do? I said.
Just stay put and try to rest, he said. We'll get to you in 3 or 4 hours. Don't worry. You won't feel anything.
Then he and Mother were gone.
Won't feel anything? I was already feeling pretty crappy. I get pissed off and go for a walk and bring back the plague from outer space?
I touched the window and said, "Window outside." It was almost completely dark, just a faint line of red showing the horizon. The dust storm was over. The whole plan crystallized then. I guess I'd been thinking of parts of it since I knew I'd be alone for a while. I just zipped up my skin suit and walked. The main corridor was almost deserted. People running along on urgent errands. Nobody was thinking of going outside. No one but me. If the aliens had had a picture of me leaving the base at 2 in the morning before, then they probably were watching us all the time. I could signal them, send a message to Red. I searched around for a pencil to disable the airlock buzzer. Even while I was doing it, I wondered whether I was acting sanely. Was I just trying to escape being operated on? Mother used to say, "Do something, even if it's wrong." There didn't seem to be anything else to do other than sit around and watch the situation deteriorate. If the aliens were watching, I could make Red understand how serious it was. Whether he and Green could do anything, I didn't know. But what else was there? Things were happening too fast. I didn't run into anyone until I was almost there. Then I nearly collided with Card as he stepped out of the mess hall bathroom.
"What you doing over here?" he said. "I thought you were supposed to be in sick bay."
"No, I'm just..." Of course, I started coughing. "Let me by, all right?"
"No. What are you up to?"
"Look, Microbe, I don't have time to explain." I pushed by him. "Every second counts."
"You're going outside again? What are you, crazy?"
"Look, look, look. For once in your life, don't be a..." I had a moment of desperate inspiration and grabbed him by the shoulders. "Card, listen. I need you. You have to trust me."
"What? This is about your crazy Martian story?"
"I can prove it's not crazy, but you have to come help me."
"Help you with what?"
"Just suit up and step outside with me. I think they'll come, the Martians, if I signal them, and they might be able to help us." He was hesitant. I knew he only half believed me, but at least he did half believe me.
"What? What do you want me to do outside?"
"I just want you to stand in the door so the airlock can't close. That way the dragon can't come out and frug the deal." That did make him smile.
"So what you want is for me to be in as deep shit as you are."
"Exactly. Are you up for it?"
"You are so easy to see through, you know. You could be a window."
"Yeah, yeah. Are you with me?" He glanced toward the changing room and then back down the hall.
"Let's go."
We must have gotten me into my suit in 90 seconds flat. It took him an extra minute because he had to strip and wiggle into the skin suit first. I kept my eye on the changing room door, but I didn't have any idea what I would say if someone walked in. Just a little incest? My faceplate was still spattered with dried blood, which was part of the vague plan. I assumed they would know that the blood meant trouble, and their bug camera, or whatever it was, would be on me as soon as I stepped outside. I had a powerful flashlight and would turn that on my face with no other lights. Then wave my arms, jump around, whatever. We rushed through the safety check and I put 2 fresh oxygen bottles into the dog I'd bashed up, disabled the buzzer,
and we crowded into the airlock, closed it, and cycled it. We'd agreed not to use the radio. Card signaled for me to touch helmets.
How long?
An hour, anyhow. I could walk past Telegraph Hill by then.
Okay. Watch where you step, clumsy.
I hit his arm. The door opened, and I stepped out into the darkness. There was a little light, actually. The sun had just gone down. Card put one foot out on the sand and leaned back against the door. He pantomimed, looking at his watch. I closed my eyes and pointed the light at my face. Bright red through my eyelids, I knew I'd be dazzled blind for a while after I stopped. So after I'd given them a minute of the bloody faceplate, I just stood in one place and shined the light out over the plain, waving it around in fast circles, which I hoped would mean help. I wasn't sure how long it had taken Red to bring me from their habitat level to the cave where he was parked, and then on to here. Maybe 2 hours? I hadn't been tracking too well. Without a dust storm, it might be faster. I pulled on the dog and headed toward the right of Telegraph Hill. The last thing I expected to happen was this. I hadn't walked 20 yards when Red came zooming up on his weird vehicle and stopped in a great spray of dust, which sparkled in the last light of dusk. Card broke radio silence with a justifiable, "Holy shit!" Red helped me put the dog on one side, and I got into the other, and we were off. I looked back and waved at Card, and he waved back. The base shrank really fast and slipped under the horizon. I looked forward for a moment and then turned away. It was just a little too scary, screaming along a few inches over the ground, missing boulders by a hair. The steering must have been automatic. Or maybe Red had inhuman reflexes. Nothing else about him was all that human. Except the need to come back and help. He must have been waiting nearby. It seemed no more than 10 or 12 minutes before the thing slowed down and drifted into the slanted cave I remembered. Maybe he had taken a roundabout way before, to hide the fact that they were so close. We got out the dog, and I followed him back down the way we had come a couple of days before. I had to stop twice with coughing fits, and by the time we got to the place where he shed his Mars suit, there was a scary amount of blood. An odd thing to think, but I wondered whether he would take my body back if I died here. Why should I care? We went on down, and at the level where the lake was visible, Green was waiting, along with two small ones dressed in white. We went together down to the dark floor and followed blue lines back to what seemed to be the same hospital room where I'd first awakened after the accident. I slumped down on the pillow, feeling completely drained and about to barf. I unshipped my helmet and took a cautious breath. It smelled like a cold mushroom farm, exactly what I expected. Red handed me a glass of water, and I took it gratefully. Then he picked up my helmet with his two large arms and did a curiously human thing with a small one. He wiped a bit of blood off the inside with one finger and then lifted it to his mouth to taste it.
"Wait!"
I said.
"That could be poison to you!"
He sat the helmet down.
"How nice of you to be concerned,"
he said, in a voice like a British cube actor. I just shook my head. After a few seconds, I was able to squeak,
"What?"
"Many of us can speak English," Green said, "or other of your languages. We've been listening to your radio, television, and cube for 200 years.
"But before, you..."
"That was to protect ourselves," Red said. "When we saw you had hurt yourself, and I had to bring you here, it was decided that no one would speak a human language in your presence. We were not ready to make contact with humans. You are a dangerous, violent race that tends to destroy what it doesn't understand."
"Not all of us," I said.
"We know that.
We were considering various courses of action when we found out you were ill.
We monitor your colony's communications with Earth, one of the White Ones said, and saw immediately what was happening to you. We all have that breathing fungus soon after we're born, but with us, it isn't serious. We have an herb that cures it permanently.
So, you can fix it? Red spread out all four hands.
We are so different from you in chemistry and biology. The treatment might help you. It might kill you.
But this crap is sure to kill me if we don't do anything. The other white-clad one spoke up.
We don't know. I am called Reslin, and I am of a class that studies your people, a scientist or philosopher. The fungus would certainly kill you if it continued to grow. It would fill up your lungs and you couldn't breathe. But we don't know. It never happens to us. Your body may learn to adapt to it, and it would be illegal?
Immoral. Improper for us to experiment on you. If you were to die, I don't know how to say it. Impossible.
The cure for your cheville? Your ankle was different, Green said. There was no risk, a cheville, to your life.
I coughed and stared at the spatter of blood on my palm. But if you don't treat me, and I die, won't that be the same thing? All four of them made a strange buzzing sound. Red patted my shoulder.
Carmen, that's a wonderful joke. The same thing.
He buzzed again, and so did the others. Wait, I said. I'm going to die, and it's funny?
No, 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 Green said. Dying itself isn't funny.
Red put his large hands on his potato head and waggled it back and forth, and the others buzzed. Red tapped his head three times, which set them off again. A natural comedian. If you have to explain a joke, it isn't funny. I started to cry, and he took my hand in his small, scaly one and patted it.
We are so different. What is funny is how we here are caught. We don't have a choice. We have to treat you even though we don't know what the outcome will be.
He buzzed softly.
But that's not funny to you.
No! I tried not to wail. I can see this part. There's a paradox. You might kill me trying to help me.
And that's not funny to you?
No, not really. Not at all, really.
Would it be funny if it was somebody else?
Funny? No!
What if it was your worst enemy? Would that make you smile?
No, I don't have any enemies that bad. Maybe one. He said something that made the others buzz. I gritted my teeth and tried not to cry. My whole chest hurt, like both lungs held a burning ton of crud, and here I was trying not to barf in front of a bunch of potato-head aliens. Red, even if I don't get the joke, could you do the treatment before I foogly die?
Oh, Carmen, it's being prepared. It's a way of dealing with difficult things. We joke. You would say laughing instead of crying.
He turned around, evidently looking back the way we had come, though it's hard to tell which way a potato is looking.
It is taking too long, which is part of why we have to laugh. When we have children, it's all at one time, and so they all need the treatment at the same time, a few hundred days later, after they bud. We're trying to grow. It's like trying to find a vegetable out of season. We have to make it grow when it doesn't want to, and make enough for the other younglings in your colony.
The adults don't get it? He did a kind of shrug.
We don't. Or rather, we only get it once, as children. Do you know about mumps and measles?
Usels?
Measles and mumps used to be diseases humans got as children, before your parents' parents were born. We heard about them on the radio, and they reminded us of this.
A new green-clad small one came through the plastic sheets, holding a stone bowl. She and Red exchanged a few whistles and scrapes.
If you are like us when we are small, he said, this will make you excrete in every way. So you may want to undress.
How wonderful. Here comes Carmen, the stark naked shitting, pissing, farting, burping, barfing human sideshow. Don't forget snot and earwax. I got out of the marsh suit and unzipped the skin suit and stepped out of that. I was cold, and every orifice clenched up tight. Okay, let's go. Red held my right arm with his two large ones, and Green did the same on the left. Not a good sign. The new green one spit into the bowl, and it started to smoke. She brought that smoking herb under my nose, and I tried to get away. But Red and Green held me fast. It was the worst-smelling crap you could ever imagine. I barfed through mouth and nose, and then started retching and coughing explosively, horribly, like a cat with a hairball. It did bring up the two fungus things, like small, furry, rotten fruit. I would have barfed again if there had been anything left in my stomach, but I decided to pass out instead.